Good morning and welcome to the United Lodge of Theosophists. We welcome you to our weekly meetings. We would like to extend a feeling of a happy new year to all, and that we should remember that there are great changes going about this time of year, where our energy is beginning to rise. So in the light of that, our topic for this morning is human potential and perfectibility. Now, we have these conversations three times a week, but we have it under, we all are in agreement with certain declarations that are made. So those are: the policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of theosophy without professing attachment to any theosophical organization. It is loyal to the great founders of the theosophical movement, but does not concern itself with dissensions or differences of individual opinion. The work it has on hand and the end it keeps in view are too absorbing and too lofty to leave it the time or inclination to take part in side issues. That work and that end is the dissemination of the fundamental principles of the philosophy of theosophy and the exemplification in practice of those principles through a truer realization of the self, a profounder conviction of universal brotherhood. It holds that the unassailable basis for union among theosophists, wherever and however situated, is a similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching, and therefore has neither constitution, bylaws, nor officers, the sole bond between its associates being that basis. And it aims to disseminate this idea among theosophists and further immunity. It regards as theosophists all who are engaged in the true service of humanity without distinction of race, creed, sex, condition, or organization. And it welcomes to its association all those who are in accord with its declared purposes and who desire to fit themselves, study and otherwise, to be the better able to help and teach others. The true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, yet belongs to each and all. To carry out this declaration, the United Lodge of Theosophists here in Philadelphia, we conduct three public meetings on Sunday mornings, on Wednesday evenings, and on Friday evenings. Now, this morning's panel is taking up human potential and perfectibility. Now, on Wednesday, the 4th of January, we are continuing our study in the
We can't hear you.
You wish to go to the lodge, to Theosophy Hall. I think the doors open at 7:15. And you're welcome to come in and join the lecture in the lodge. Then on this Friday, from 6:30 to 7:30, we are studying together Mr. Crosby's article. And we are on part 10. So,
can't hear you.
spiritual evolution. Now this morning, we'll start with human perfectibility. We'll start here because it's an idea which is predominant in the philosophy of theosophy. Everything is contingent around certain ideas. And these ideas are that we are immortal in our true nature. We never die. We are always conscious on some plane of activity. We are self-conscious beings. So therefore, we are, with the analogy is used, we are a ray of that great sun. Yes, I hear. Yeah. All right. Hear me now. Sorry. Where was I?
We can also hear a lot of background noise behind you.
Okay. All right. There's. Where was I? Can
that's my thought. Drop in the ocean.
Ray of the sun. We are dropping the ocean of this reality, all right? So we have to take a look at ourselves and who we are. That is the foundation of theosophy. Self-reflection. That is a property or a power of a self-conscious being. Now, we look at ourselves and we realize that there's no outside God. There's only that God that lies within. Because again, we go back to the premise that there are perfected beings and that we are perfectible. So if this idea is not entertained in the mind, the reality will never be obtained. So where we find in a world where we are originally sinful, it is a downward trending idea. The fact that we are eternal beings is a uplifting, positive thing. So what is it that we have to do to perfect ourselves? What do we have to do? Well, the philosophy gives us many hints, many, many directions in which we can go. And it gives you the opportunity to find something that you can identify with and begin your study. This idea of a I have echo. No. This idea of being perfectible is in our very nature, so that we are an eternal, boundless, immutable, and omnipresent being that had no beginning and has no end. It is eternal. So this being the case, we are shown that there are elder brothers in this world that have perfected themselves in other ages, in other times. That this is the path of humanity. We all are going to share that same path, but we're going to travel it in many different ways. So if we are these divine beings, what has happened? Well, as we have come forth into the world, things have become more material. And it goes down the ladder of seven. into more and more and more becomes material. And this connotates a motion. Everything is constantly changing. And that our world is governed by karma or cause and effect. That is the only true law that exists. And why does this law exist? Well, it's for the perfectibility of mankind, for him to see what his shortcomings or his faults are. That creates a barrier between ourselves and the world around us. We found this quote from a master, and he said, "The more unselfish one works for his fellow men and divests himself of the illusionary sense of personal isolation, the more he is free from Maya and the nearer he approaches divinity." That sense of personal isolation. Again, this philosophy has many avenues of study. Hints from masters, writings that we have refined in the literature of the theosophical movement. One of the books in which we are asked to look at and study and ponder over is The Voice of the Silence. And in that, it starts, Fragment 1, The Voice of the Silence. These instructions are for those ignorant of the dangers of the lower iddy. What are the lower iddies? Our psychic powers. Our psychic powers. So we do have powers that are not developed. And the only way that they can be developed safely and to be a benefit to mankind is to be humble, not push ourselves forward. Live in the moment and do what is outlined in the Bhagavad Gita. In the Gita, in the second chapter, we are given the philosophy of theosophy in a few pages. It's called the Sankhya doctrine. But then it goes on and gives us another valuable lesson, is how to apply that Sankhya doctrine to life. And therefore, another avenue of study. So that's why each summer we study together the Bhagavad Gita, where we learn that karma yoga is a path to adeptship. And I think it has been said that adeptship is only the one extreme or the opposite pole of seership. So we endeavor to expand our mind and know that we are not alone and that we are connected to everyone else in the universe and everything. That's the reality. And it's said in the philosophy, as this motion continues, goes forward, there's a sevening of everything. And we are presently in the fifth sub-race of the fifth Ruth race of the fourth round. But that is just another expression of time. So, perfectibility, yes. The masters show us the way. But they ask of us, do not do what they say. Do what you think is best. You become self-sufficient. Well, we have these powers, as we mentioned before, but there's many powers we have. many potentialities that that exist. So our next panelist will touch on this subject and get us thinking about what our potentialities are.
Our subject or our overriding theme for the month of January is the path of spiritual evolution. So when considering the subject of human potential, in other words, do we have or show the capacity to make progress in the future? We have to ask ourselves some questions. What is the human potential for spiritual evolution? What capacities does the human being have to show that and indicate that there is a potential for spiritual progress? And finally, we have to ask ourselves, what is spiritual evolution? So in considering this subject and trying to answer such questions, it's very important that we get an understanding of the English terms we use to express these admittedly metaphysical ideas, because English is not always easy to express ideas that relate to spiritual evolution. But it is possible if we shed the light of theosophy on those terms. So let's begin with the idea or the term spirit. What do we mean by spirit? Spirit is that which is universal, immortal, unlimited, omnipresent. It is the power to know, to become, to impel. A power which is omnipotent and omnipresent in its cause and its perceived effect. And being thus, we might think of it as being the one self in each and all. And that term self is appropriate because it is from our self that all our power to know, become, to impel comes forth. And so we just need to apply our understanding of the word self to the universe. And as its nature is described, it could be considered to be the God within, the God above, which we can only know through our nature, through our individual awareness. Being that it is the omnipotent and omnipresent power to impel evolution of any kind, spiritual, mental, physical, could not go forth, could not be accomplished without spirit. So what do we mean by the term spiritual? Well, having established that spirit is universal, unconditioned basis of all action and awareness, it needs a vehicle which is equally universal, immortal, unlimited, but yet, as it is a manifested vehicle, it needs to have it the capacity to accumulate experience and the capacity to grow in its ability to manifest the divine light of spirit. Because that light of spirit, at least from the perspective of conditioned beings, limited beings, is darkness. So it needs a vehicle or a lamp. And we call that spiritual soul. So it is the one basis for action and awareness in the manifested universe. What then do we mean by the term of spiritual principles? Well, as we have said, spirit and spiritual soul are two aspects of one reality, two universal principles, one eternal, one manifesting throughout the entire period of evolution of the universe. The term monad is often used to express this idea of the unity in the duality, or that the two are ultimately one. So this monad is a spark or a ray of the universal oversoul. Well, all souls are ultimately, fundamentally, identical in essence with the universal oversoul. But they need, as souls, to evolve to know that self-consciously and act self-consciously upon that knowledge. And that state of awareness, which is the ultimate evolutionary goal of all monads, of all spiritual souls, is spiritual knowledge, divine wisdom. So what then do we mean by spiritual evolution of the soul? It's the gaining of experience to become self-consciously aware of spiritual divine wisdom, to be initiated into that divine wisdom. And that is something that goes on not only within one's individual life on earth, but is a process that is going on throughout many lives. But before we can acquire that universal self-consciousness, we must first acquire individual self-consciousness. And when we use that term acquire, we must realize that all things potentially exist within the universal oversoul, itself being an absolute about one eternal reality. So the capacity for individual self-conscious awareness and self-directed action already exists in universal oversoul, and it already exists potentially in every monad, every spiritual soul, which is a ray, one and identical with that. But it needs to be brought forth. It needs to become potent. It needs to be lit up like the flame is lit of the candle. And that can only be accomplished by souls that have acquired that light of self-consciousness in previous periods of evolution. So once that self-conscious capacity to be aware and act is aroused, that monad becomes an individual spiritual entity, a mind being, a thinker capable of self-conscious action and self-induced and self-devised effort to make progress along the path of spiritual evolution. It no longer requires or depends on the divine impulse from that universal spirit above or within all things. It rather can self-consciously choose the path it will take. And this principle of self-conscious awareness, this being, is the real human being, the immortal reincarnating thinker or ego who endures, precedes, and continues to exist, reincarnating in a long series of temporary immortal and mortal personalities and bodies. It is called manas, which is a Sanskrit term referring to mind or the thinker. It is this self-conscious spiritual entity, Atma, Buddhi, Manas, or spiritual soul and mind, which grows in purity, grows in power, grows in wisdom, grows through experience, and that is the path of its spiritual evolution until it finally acquires as much as it can of self-conscious realization of its own divine nature throughout all the experiences provided in a period of evolution. Now, we know we all have self-awareness and the capacity to prove to ourselves that we have the basis to have the capacity for spiritual evolution as a human being. Every human being does. We all have the power to think independently, the power to freely choose what we will do, the power to be self-consciously aware that I am I, and the ability to discern spiritually without anybody having to tell us what is right or wrong, what is selfish or unselfish, and what is spiritual. So it is clear to us that although we have, and every human being has the capacity to shine this forth, it does not show itself or shine itself completely or even partially in every human being. So this is why, although we have the potential, we have to pursue the path of perfectibility, because there are obstacles in our acquired lower nature under karma, our bodies, the way we sense, the way we feel, the way we think, that are obstacles to us receiving and being aware while in life of this spiritual light that comes forth through Buddhi, ultimately from spirit or Atma. So this spiritual awareness, this potential for spiritual awareness in our actions in everyday life is the result of the process of human perfectibility. But that process of human perfectibility indicated in our first panel talk is only possible because every one of us has the capacity, has the potential to become perfectible, because we are thinking spiritual beings, one in essence with the universal soul and universal spirit, and one in essence with all beings of whatever degree, interconnected with every kingdom and nature and department of the manifested universe, because that one essence, that one universal soul, is and permeates all of nature. And if we are given indications of the existence of Mahatmas, great souls, perfected human beings, they have only become that way through many lives of self-induced and self-devised effort, but they've only developed and perfected that capacity which lies in germ in every human being. So this is a good time of year to reflect and to individually determine what are the next steps we need to take, building upon our experience, our power, our accomplishments, our knowledge that we've gained previously. What are the next steps we need to take in this never-ending path of spiritual evolution. So we, at this time, we welcome you to offer your questions and comments on this subject. Okay, MDW, you need to...
Yes. We forgot the question. Could you repeat it?
Oh, was it your question or was it another question you were responding to?
I was responding to the last question.
The last question, we were just asking for contributions or questions or comments.
Oh, that's why I didn't know what it was.
Every question you have is okay.
Well, isn't it true that we can find in the ocean, there's a statement that says that the imagination is the creative aspect, and this is how we can change the world through what we imagine. Is that true, or is that just metaphysical? That if once we get to a certain point, but I always thought that whatever I wanted, it sort of manifested, but later on, not when you wanted it. And it seems that we have that ability to create, certainly with our minds.
So the question there has to do with certain faculties, capacities we recognize. We have imagination, thought, will, feeling, even memory. All these are capacities, but they are capacities of the mind, capacities of the thinker. And when that thinker incarnates, it becomes dual. Aspects of that mind come under the influence necessarily of the lower principles. And this is necessary because the mind is the intermediary. It's the bridge between the higher spiritual principles and the objective world in which of our senses and our physical bodies. And so that's how we learn. And the mind has to perceive those sensations and, in a sense, transmit the knowledge of our spiritual nature into our everyday action. So all those faculties, thought, will, imagination, memory, feeling, have a lower nature pertaining to their use of the lower mind through our physical brain, but they also have a higher capacity. And once that spiritual insight comes forth, our higher mind is able to function better on this plane or in our physical everyday awareness. And so we gain a better use, a sharper use, a clearer use of imagination, which is the creative principle, the image-making faculty, because all creativity requires the production of a thought, an idea, before it can become forth manifestedly. And also our power to use the spiritual will to call upon that accumulated memory or experience of all our lives, to bring that universal feeling of compassion. All these things are, and certainly universal thought and wisdom, all these things are faculties that can be developed in the path of spiritual evolution in our everyday lives. MHW.
Well, ULT, we have a comment or question here in Theosophy Hall.
So isn't our first step is to realize our own ignorance because if we think we know it all, we're not going to search. And a corollary to realizing our own ignorance is also to realize that we are, by our senses, we are ceaselessly self-deceived.
So was that heard?
MDW, unmute.
Well, it touches upon, the question touches upon, what is it that, or how do we purify ourselves? And we have to remember that everything begins with thought. That is where we have to begin. And we have to change the thought to change our behavior, or to change. We have to go back to a very fundamental idea. Very fundamental idea. We are the same in reality to everyone else. The same opportunities, the same everything. But we put that bubble around ourselves and we isolate ourselves.
So the senses there do deceive us. The thoughts, the conditions we identify with deceive us and give us limited perceptions of who and what we are and our connection with others. So that in our process along the path of evolution, we need to educate that lower mind of ours. We need a way to compare the accumulated wisdom of the ages, what we call theosophy, with the ideas we've accumulated in our mind from our senses and from our teachers and from our limited perceptions of the world. Now, we have the capacity to do that, to compare, to look at different ideas, discern the truth through study and investigation, because we are mind beings, because we have that power of perception. But certain ideas will expand our ability to use that light of wisdom, and certain ideas will contract it or allow our deceptions to go on. So that is why study of the philosophy, comparative study of different religions and philosophies in order to get to their underlying universal truths, study of the accumulated wisdom of wise human beings who've gone through this same path before us and have given us the benefit of their knowledge. Study is essential to the path of spiritual evolution. Now, in itself, it is not all that is needed, but it is a necessary step. Okay, MHW?
Yes, so when is the path, the idea of the spiritual path, is that something that we make a conscious decision to pursue? Or is it just that our innate nature of honoring universal brotherhood, is that what propels us along? Or are we actually saying to ourselves, well, I want to improve myself spiritually, so I'm going to do A, B, C, and D? So we were just kind of curious, is that a conscious decision that we have to make?
We would consider the idea that in this universe, everything is moving. And the monad is going back to spirit. And that's who we are in essence. We are that that spark of that divine ray. So we are on that journey back. Our task is to do that in harmony and be able to aid others on their way. So it's all about being unselfish and ultimately selfless. One will find what one's true nature really is. You have a follow-up?
So it was said in the first talk that we all have the germ of this perfectibility in us. So we're thinking then that the path might be, in a way, unconscious, because that germ is pulling us along, and that we need to divest ourselves from materiality so that our higher nature can come through and try and pull up our lower mind to the higher. Does that sound right?
Well, it's not so much pull up, is that we have to take responsibility for our life. Take responsibility for where we are at this very moment. You know, and live life according to the dictates of your heart. So there's no right way or wrong way. It's your way or my way. And this is how we learn, by taking the responsibility for our thoughts, our words, and our deeds.
So that we have presented to us a question about the nature of the path. Where is this path? And we have an interesting group of statements in the devotional literature of the world. We see teachers saying, "Follow not me, but the path I show." And the idea also expressed, before thou canst travel on the path, thou hast to become the path itself. So this suggests to us that the path is not outside. It's not any one place. It's not following any one teacher. Although in any particular life, we may need a specific teacher to show us what the next step is or point out the next step to us. But the path is ultimately within. And to the extent we become that path, meaning to the extent we self-consciously choose to make our lower nature a vehicle for the God within, the immortal ego within, to the extent we've accomplished that, to that extent, we are on the path. It is not something that it happens automatically for a human being. It is something that can only, it's conditional. It's something that can be only acquired by self-induced and self-devised effort, because we can choose to remain stagnant, or we can choose to go backward on the path, not even on the path but of spiritual evolution, but on the path of materialism and destruction, annihilation of our awareness of spirit. Now, the impelling aspect of spirit will always be there, just as the sun is shining on the cloudiest of days. But that does not mean we will automatically benefit from it and make hay while the sun shines, like the old expression goes. So we have to choose to travel and become this path. We have a chat, which might be first handled by our first panelist. How important is meditation in perfecting ourselves?
How important is meditation in perfecting ourselves? Meditation is that going within. The many layers that make up our consciousness and our reality. Meditation brings us back slowly to that witness, that perceiver. And it makes us able to see things in a different way. It gives for us a time of the day when we are quiet and self-reflected, looking at ourselves and evaluating our day. We're evaluating the thoughts we have during that day. But meditation is a practice that one has to perform to keep an even keel. So,
we've lost you there, MDW, for the time, so we'll take it up here. So meditation is of the essential nature of the immortal incarnating ego. It is the action, the thought simultaneously of that ego. What we need to do before we can truly meditate is to learn how to concentrate, because it is the flitting, changing, wandering monkey mind of our lower mental nature that jumps from sensation to sensation, from memory to memory, from desire to desire, and is inherently not one-pointed, that produces the vibration, just like if you shake the camera, you can't take a clear picture. The light from the image can't record itself on that film. And so the activity, the action, the thought of the higher cannot come through unless that lens of our lower mind is focused. And so we first need to practice concentration, which is not a passive thing, but is probably the most active thing we can do and willful, self-directed thing we can do with our lower mind. And it needs the help, at least the inspiration and will of the higher, to carry forth. It is said in the philosophy that those spiritual beings who incarnated among humanity and taught them the arts and sciences, who incarnated in human forms and in some cases lit up or partially incarnated in groups of human beings, those self-conscious beings who acquired that light in previous periods of evolution are called the sons of will and yoga. And yoga is, as Krishna tells us, meditation. A constant meditation. One is real and eternal. And it is skill in performing action based on that. And of course, our will as a creative force is directed by that meditation. So we are inherently in our nature, to some degree to perfected, sons of will and yoga. And in this, our attempt to daily meditate, to make that power, that capacity active in everyday life. So the more we can do that, the more we can perfect ourselves and shape our own path in this life according to that awareness, according to that will. So we're coming to the time, January 4th, which in the tradition of the occult schools is called the occult New Year, because it is said at that time or around that time, 18 million years ago, that those sons of will and yoga, those elder brothers of humanity, incarnated and lit up in the monads of those senseless human forms, the capacity for self-conscious thought, self-directed thought, and made of those mindless monads, self-conscious thinking entities. And so it began at that point, the new cycle of our spiritual evolution on this earth. Just as at this time of year, we are beginning a new cycle of evolution, spiritual, mental, psychic, physical, and we'll cover all these aspects in the weeks to come, and taking advantage of that upward spiritual impulse referred to in the first panel talk that is fresh and alive and to the fore at this time of year.
The fact that we have 1 minute more of sunshine each day, and if we pay attention to our inner clock, we can feel that rising up at this time of year, up into the vernal equinox. It's a time to make plans, to make commitments, to look at oneself and see the better. Let our imaginations run wild.
Following up on that analogy, that correspondence, when we sense, as we have over the last week, a little bit more daylight or a little bit more light as we approach the latter part of the afternoon and early evening, it gives us hope that spring and summer are around the corner. And so, in the same way, if we can sense just a little bit more of that ray of potentiality, of hope, of conviction that we can make ourselves better, that'll carry us through. It'll give us hope for a better future. We do not have to sulk and be impatient, because spring will not start tomorrow. We can enjoy the season as it is and learn from it and grow within. In the same way, we don't have to sulk and despair and become impatient because our ideals that we formulate are not reached tomorrow or even this week. But we can use the weeks and months to come to grow, to test, to strengthen, and to gain hope that they will, in the spring, in the summer, show forth a little bit more evidence of their achievement if we stay true to our convictions, true to our intentions. So a chat comes out, which we think has been partially covered, but we certainly invite other comments. How important are New Year's resolutions during this period of the year? What do you think?
If one carries out the resolution to its end, it builds willpower. But if it is broken, we weaken ourselves.
Well, and they are important. But remember, we are essentially sons of healing yoga. So if we're going to make a resolution, we have to make a positive image in our mind of the end in view. A resolution is much more important and much more effective if we think of the goal, the end in view, the possibility, not to think about what we don't want to do, because that's putting the negative in our mind, but to use our imagination to create the positive image, and then throw all our power of desire, of devotion, of will into the realization of that ideal, and be patient that it will eventually manifest. With that power of will and yoga, what is called in the philosophy Kriya Sakti, is the ability of each and every, is the capacity of each and every human soul to manifest objectively what it holds and wills in its mind. MHW, you had a thought as well?
Yes. And we think that the idea of making resolutions, and if we do it seriously, that this time of year is the time where we can actually look back and do some self-reflection. And the resolutions, as was said, need to be done in a positive light, as well as being, not something frivolous, but something important. So that was it.
So what is the nature of a resolution? Resolutions made at this time of year, at the end of one cycle and the beginning of a new one, are like the teachings of the great avatars and quote saviors of the world, the great teachers that come at the beginning and the end of great cycles. And they establish a tone of thought and action, a resolution, if you will, that will make itself felt throughout the entire cycle. And so we have Krishna, Buddha, Jesus coming at definite cycles to establish a basis of thought and feeling. So the resolutions that we make at this time are degrees of thought and aspiration that we are focused on, that we are establishing profoundly in our nature with the expectation that they will remain with us throughout the year. They will be there. They will strengthen. They will lighten our lives. They will be there as inner rulers to guide our activity. So resolutions are not just declarations of what we want to achieve on the outer plane, but the establishment of confirmed and strong intentions of thought and feeling in our hearts and minds. And through that process, we raise not only our own heart and mind, but the heart and mind of other human beings with which we are intimately connected with on every plane of our being. So we are drawing then to the end of our meeting this morning. We invite you to attend our Wednesday evening study class on the ocean of theosophy, which will go more into this subject of higher and lower mind. And of course, this Friday, this coming Friday, on article or part 10 of Western Occultism, these little gems from the writings of Robert Crosby are all little guideposts on our path of spiritual evolution. So wishing you all a happy new year and have a good day.
Wait, Steve.
Yeah. Yes. Okay.
No.
Just let it go.